The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 502. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. My guest is an independent comic book creator who goes by just one name, Raw. Last year, coincidentally around this same time in November, I spoke to Raw about some of the projects that he had going on. He saw me at CXC and said, "Hey man, I'd love to come on and talk about this new project that I got." And I said, "Absolutely, for sure." Now, the project's called Tag and Quest. And it's a tale about a young man that lives in a parallel universe where graffiti is seen as magic. He's trying to learn the ways of becoming a graffiti master, so to speak. And he has two mentors that are showing him the way. And there's a lot of misadventure that goes on. It's a great, great story, and I think you'll really like it. I will tell you that Raw had a Kickstarter for the project, but probably by the time that you hear this episode, it's probably going to be over with. It is fully funded as of this recording, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't check it out. Definitely go over, especially check out the video that he did for the project. It's fantastic. I really rave about it in our conversation, because it's pretty awesome. That's all I'm going to say. So we're also going to talk about many other topics as well, such as past projects, inspirations, you know, philosophy about collaborating with people, et cetera, et cetera. But before I get to my conversation with Raw, I need to let you all know about a couple of sponsors. And the first sponsor is the newest sponsor, Courtney614 Online Sales. If you need great deals on women's fashion and health and beauty, then look no further than Courtney614. You can find her on all those major reselling sites like Whatnot, eBay, Poshmark, etc. Simply look for Courtney614, that's spelled C-O-R-T-N-E-Y, or on some of those sites you'll find it Courtney_614, but nonetheless you'll get some fabulous deals and let her know that you heard about her particular endeavors from me right here on the PVD Cast. And now let's talk about the old school sponsor. Of course, I'm talking about World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. They have tons of comics from every era, the golden, silver, and bronze and modern era. They also have graphic novels. They have toys, collectibles, comic book supplies, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. You name it, they got it for your fandom. So stop on over to the store and say hi to Jeff and the fine folks at WG Comics. And once again, they're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. But you can also check them out online. WGComics.com is a web address, and they're pretty active on the Facebook page. Just search for at WG Comics. And I'd like to thank both my sponsors for their support, and I really appreciate it, and can't say it enough, but I'm going to say thank you, thank you, thank you. All right, that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with the man behind Tag and Quest. His name is Raw. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight I'm joined by a gentleman who has just one name. We call him Raw. And he's the man behind Raw Comics. So how you doing, man?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me, dude.
You're quite welcome. We crossed paths in September at CXC. I guess I got to ask, how was your experience at CXC this year?
Man, it was so fun. It's wild. It was like a full circle moment for me because Jonah Vasquez was there. Johnny the Homicidal Maniac, Invader Zim guy. And that was like a profound impact on me. Like to the point where my high school senior class, we were the first senior class that had to do like a graduation project. It took like all 4 years, you'd have these like check-ins with different teachers and stuff. Like, so there was a report you had to do about your topic, which I picked comics. You had to do a presentation, and then you had to like make something based on whatever that was. So I mashed up Johnny the Homicidal Maniac with Calvin and Hobbes and made this cool little like dumb comic. But I have one surviving page of it because, you know, that was decades ago. And I showed it to Jonah, and he was cool, and he signed it. So I'm going to get that frame. But just felt like this neat, like, kismet sort of thing. It was cool.
How was the sales, if you will, if you don't mind me asking, for CXC? Did it help you guys? Did it help you out with your particular projects that you got for sale?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely did. And I feel like I had more comic stuff this year and comic stuff that I was able to sell. Because a lot of people might not know this, but a lot of like smaller up-and-comers like me kind of get by on like smaller anthologies, but those are usually embargoed. So like if I do a 6-page comic for a small publication, I might not be allowed to like print that on my own or sell it outside of the anthology for like a year or 6 months. So I had some embargoes that were over, and I was allowed to sell like standalone copies of some of the shorter stuff I've done. Because a lot of those anthologies, I don't even get them. I might get like one or two copies. But the one company I do stuff with, they're like overseas anyway. So it was cool just to have like actual comics instead of just like the usual print sticker sort of thing at my table.
Okay. All right. You know what? I have a question about collaboration, but I don't want to bury the lead because we're here tonight to talk about your current Kickstarter, which by the time that this episode airs, it'll probably be just about over because there's about 7 days left. But you have a Kickstarter for your new project called Tag and Quest. Yes, can you sir. Give us a little synopsis on the project?
Yeah, so it's, man, I've said it so many times and now I'm blanking. So the concept is, you know, it's a world where graffiti is magic. And this kid who actually sucks at graffiti magic, he's sort of chosen by fate, unknowingly to him, to save the world. So he gets teamed up with these two kind of expert graffiti mages just to travel the world and go reseal these graffiti sigils that are imprisoning a fractured darkness that's kind of scattered all over the land. It was very like inspired by JRPGs, Saturday morning cartoons, action adventure, fun stuff. The cell I do is Last Airbender meets Jet Set Radio.
Enough said. Well, you do have good news that the Kickstarter is fully funded.
We made it. We did it.
Do you feel a sense of relief?
Yeah, kind of, but now I'm stressed out because I gotta do issue number two.
Well, you do it all. You do every aspect of the production of the book. How do you manage to stay on target with that? Because I can only imagine for myself that would be, if I was producing a book, that would be my biggest nightmare, is if I had to draw, write, color, letter, promote, sell, you know, that would freak me out. I think that I wouldn't handle that. So how do you handle it?
I'm borderline not super realistic about things, or I let last minute panic set in and I just do it. But for the most part, you just got to be delusional and believe it's going to happen, I guess. But with this, I think something that really, really helped me, without a shadow of a doubt, I would not have done this unless I entered this thing called Pitch Fest earlier this year in like March. I entered this event. It was like a kid's graphic novel Pitch Fest. So you pay to enter, and then there was another tier where you could pay to have your pitch reviewed by like an editor or industry bigwig or whatever. But for that, you needed not even pages, you needed spreads. So you needed one to four different spreads of finished artwork, along with like a pitch, like a rough pitch kind of proposal. And so I signed up for it and paid ahead of time. So it's like, I have to finish my spreads. So no matter what, so I don't lose my money. And then I just showed it to a bunch of people. My fiance showed it to a bunch of her friends, like people that don't even really read comics. And they're all like, what happens next? This is really cool. Like, he has to finish this. And my feedback from the editor, like the one-on-one session went really well, to the point where I was like, do I even need like an editor or like an agent? Like, you're telling me. It basically was like, this would fit well on a shelf right now. If this came across my desk, I'd pick it up. In the back of my brain, I'm like, it just came across you. Yeah, it's here. It's here. What do you got? Give me something, man. But no, but he did give me some good advice on weird things that I wouldn't have thought of, because I'm from more like brick and mortar comic shop floppy world. And that's way different from like young adult graphic novel comic world. Things like, your gutters are too thin for young adult or for like middle grade graphic novels, or some of your pages have too many panels for that age group, which I thought was weird and maybe too dumb, because when I was in middle school and I was reading pretty dense comics and stuff. So it's like, are they just dumbing this stuff down for kids, or what they think will sell, or I don't know. So I was just like, I think I would just rather do it on my own instead of get paired up with a publisher who's just going to make me change things for like a market. I just want to make it the way I want to make it.
And I think you mentioned that in some of my research, that, you know, the reason you're at Kickstarter for this campaign is that you want to do it your way. And
yeah,
that obviously in your description of what went down with that meeting with the editor and everything, it seems that you're really, really convinced that your way is the only way to have this project be successful. And that's a good thing. Yeah, that's pretty, not a bad thing. No. I mean, yeah. It's a good thing, because it shows, you know, that you have this passion. In fact, you've had this tale kind of in your mind for a while, correct?
Yeah, it's weird. It came out. It was just, and this is like typical of me, of how I blow things up out of proportion. An artist I follow, he made these little zines that went in like old, remember the old Game Boy from the 80s, like Nintendo Game Boy? And the cartridges came in those little clear packs that like opened up. You put your cartridge in it when you're done playing so it doesn't get dust inside. He made little mini comics that went inside of those cases. And I was like, that's a cool idea. I want to come up with like a cool little like adventure comic. And before I even had a story in mind, I just drew like these three kids with like graffiti kind of weapons. And then from there, my brain went in like a million directions at once. But it took like about a year and a half to like settle on a script that I was happy with, because I started writing like mini episodic adventures that take place later. They're just kind of one-off fun adventures, but I need that setup of like how the characters meet and go on this quest. Man, first issues are hard, dude. Like they're the hardest to write, I feel like. But yeah, I'm happy with how it came out, and I hope people dig it.
Do you have like experience with graffiti? Like, why did graffiti become the catalyst for these heroes?
Man, so this is crazy. It's like in my DNA, I think. So I grew up like in very rural, like northeastern PA or central PA, I forget where it is, but it's like Amish country. And I moved around a lot in my life, but I never really felt like I fit in anywhere till I moved to like a city with like a, that was very diverse, like a lot of different ethnicities and stuff. I'm Puerto Rican, so there's a lot of Puerto Ricans where I lived. When I was younger, in like elementary school, when I got into comics and stuff, and I just loved seeing graffiti like on the trains, on the walls. And then when I moved to a more rural area, I just felt this disconnect. Like there wasn't any other kids with my skin color those kids had never even went to a city. Like they just lived around cornfields their whole lives. So I would get like hip hop magazines, like the Source magazine. They always had a graffiti section in the front, and I would just like copy stuff I saw. And then when I was a little older, I found this, there was this bridge in my town. I had no clue. I went over this bridge every day for years, but underneath it, there was all these old tags from like the 70s and 80s. So me and my friend started spraying there because nobody bothered us. It was just by the train tracks under this bridge. And then I met my dad when I was 13, and turned out he was like a huge graffiti person, like well-known graffiti guy in Philly. And the Philly Inquirer did a piece about him. He would do murals whenever there was like drug-related violence or like gang violence. If somebody lost their life on a street corner or whatever, it would put a mural up to kind of promote a peace. And I was like, that's cool. What if I could like somehow tie that into this world of like using graffiti for this like good thing? So that's kind of where it all came from.
Wow, that's really cool, because you know, one of the questions that I was going to follow up with is, do you feel that like graffiti art gets a little bit of a bad rap, or used to get a bad rap? I don't know if that's the case nowadays, because I remember hearing it, you know, I heard it from my parents about that's defacing public property, like, you know what I mean? So
oh yeah, it's totally bad. Vandalism is bad, but graffiti, the art form, there's a lot of like primal human stuff to it, like just dedicating yourself to getting good at something. Like the really, really good artists that like work hard on developing a style, or a style that's unique to them, and just getting their name out here, is this way of just saying like, I existed on this planet for a time, this is me, hello. Like just leaving something of yourself behind. And as stupid as it may sound to some people, I just think that dedication is really admirable. And it's to the point, you know, it's just so ingrained in culture where it's everywhere now. Like brands are using graffiti like as logos, or like as part of their advertising and marketing and stuff. So yeah, it's just, it's one of those weird things that humans made that got bigger than it probably should have.
Kind of already asked you about this, but I just, you know, maybe have another follow-up question to it is, you've had this tale in your head for a long time. Why did it take so long for you to get it out there? Were you just busy with other projects? Was there just some self-doubt that you're like, maybe people don't want to hear this tale, or what was the delay?
A little bit of both, really. Like,
really? Okay.
I would start working on it, and then some other stuff would come up. Like a writer reached out to me and was like, hey, do you want to work on some stuff? So, and then another writer worked out and was like, hey, you want to work on some stuff? And then another writer. So I worked with three different writers last year and part of this year on some things, just like short stuff. And then it was that first issue. I if you would look at my Google Drives, like I have so many issue number ones for different things started, but it's so hard to commit or pull the trigger on one, because like I'm very world building with my stuff. And I think this day and age, when we're used to like binge watching like really long series, like, you know, maybe 10 hours of an hour show, I want to write at that level, but at a comic, when you're trying to cram stuff into like 22-ish pages. And then there's that part of me that's like, maybe I can do 32 pages, but I'm doing everything myself. So then that's extra stuff. That's extra stuff I have to draw. So I did a bunch of versions of that first issue, but something that really helped was the C3, the Columbus Cartoon Coalition. I posted the script there and was like, anybody want to like take a look and just give me some kind of feedback? And I sent it to like friends and family that I know like read anime and comics and stuff. And I got a bunch of different pieces of feedback from people. And that was a huge help, because a lot of the feedback I got was stuff that just kind of confirmed things I already felt but wasn't sure about. And so when you hear it from somebody else, like when you're kind of on the fence about a decision, but you kind of know maybe you should go right, and then you have like three other people saying, I think you should go right, don't go left. It's like, yes, okay, go with my gut. You learn to like trust yourself through that process. So what I actually wound up doing, just from the feedback and stuff, I kind of just put the script away for a few months, and I dug up what I had finished for the Pitch Fest thing. And I knew where the story was going. I knew how I wanted that first issue to end. But I just started making it up drawing instead of writing. And that's the first time I've ever really done that, because you know, you read any kind of book, it's like first you write, do your outline, then you write your script, then you do your thumbnails. And this, I was just like, I want to feel like a kid again and just play and just kind of make it up as I go, while sticking to what I already know in the back of my mind has to happen. And that unlocked all this new stuff I didn't know I had in me, or I didn't plan for. Like all these little dumb surprise moments. Like there's a character in the stories, the main character's sketch, he has a one-eyed cat named Uno. And in the script, Uno just kind of runs off into the jungle and the kid goes after him. And that was kind of it. But then as I'm drawing, I'm like, wait, what is the cat doing though? Like the cat should be doing something. So then it kind of became a challenge to myself. Like have the cat just doing something funny in the background, that makes the pages more fun to look at. It kind of makes it more engaging. And that's not something I was really thinking about while writing. I'm just like kind of trying to get through the plot and all the beats. But as I was drawing it, everything just felt more alive and the characters felt more alive, almost like action figures. Like I could like pose everything better and just make a different story than I kind of intended on. And it was, I was really happy with it. I was like, this kind of more fun than writing. I think I'm just going to do this maybe for all my stuff. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, let's talk about a couple of the characters. You already mentioned the first one, Sketch, correct?
Yeah. Sketch, man. I love this kid. It's weird. Like, they're just these ideas in your head. And then as they come to life, like, I don't know. I would say out of all the stuff I'm working on, like, I'm doing that dance of, like, what do I want to put my all into, like, of these ideas I've written. And I have stuff, stories way older than Tag and Quest, but these characters are all, like, resonating way more, I think. So Sketch is a lot like me when I was a kid, and I feel like I was a lot like, maybe a lot of, especially boys probably feel like this, but like Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes, I feel like that kid was me to a T. Like, when I would read Calvin and Hobbes, it's like, he's just like me for real. Like, he's me. He's like all the flaws and charm of a typical like 8-year-old kid. He's really curious. He's mischievous. He kind of thinks he knows more than he does. Cause he's like on that cusp of double digits. And like, he's like going to be out of, you know, when I was 8, it was like, okay, I'm like almost going to be a 5th grader. I'm like 2 years away, but like, you just felt cool and bigger than you really are. So his whole thing is he's really good at art, especially when it comes to his sketchbook. His sketchbook has great stuff in it. You know, when it's like pens, markers, but then when it comes to actual graffiti, like holding a spray can, his stuff comes out drippy and sloppy and splattery, and he just can't get it right. Or there's a magic system sort of, and there's like hand style sigils, and it's this made up kind of alphabet, almost think like Elvish or something, or like magic sigils in like Dungeons and Dragons campaign, if there's like traps in a room with invisible sigils. So but it's kind of like a periodic table of like things to memorize, and that kind of stuff he's not good at, like the more studious aspect of the graffiti magic. He's just like this free-flowing kid because he's so good in this sketchbook that gets to his head, so his ego makes him think he's better than he is in a lot of regards. So he kind of gets looked down on in his village. Everybody sort of takes it very seriously because they're one of the few villages where there's an ancient like graffiti seal on this floating island that kind of overlooks like this cove his village is in, and they kind of incorporated a lot of that into their culture, where there's like a ritual where every year like kids go and race to see who can be the first one to like reseal this spell tag. And so now he's of age, and it's like his time to like join this coming of age ceremony thing, but he sucks and he's like having doubts, and that's sort of when the story starts. So yeah, I want him to kind of reflect that essence of just being an artist and also coming of age. Like, when you're an artist, you have a lot of internal struggles of like, sometimes you do think you're better than you are when you're not there yet, but a lot of times you don't believe in yourself enough when you are good enough. And that's something he struggles with too, is like leaning into his strengths as an artist and then channeling that through graffiti magic to save the world.
Well, let's talk about the two specialists, if you will, when it comes to graffiti. Let's talk about those two characters real quick.
Yeah. So real quick, we got Kiki, AKA Keeks. She's like calm, cool, collected, just super chill big sister, but she's also really smart. Like, she knows the history of all graffiti, all ancient graffiti mages. If they're traveling somewhere and there's like tag, she'll know who did it, what year, what type of spell that was, what it's warding off, or what kind of, maybe I don't want to spill too much stuff, but like environmental stat bonuses it might be giving. And then there is Two Tone, who's like the daredevil, just crazy one that's going to jump first into stuff. Does not the brightest, but he has a lot of heart. So yeah, that's the team, and they kind of take Sketch under their wing and show him the ropes.
So right now, we just said a little while ago that there's about 7 days left in the campaign, but once the campaign's over, can folks still get their hands on the copy of the book?
Yes, I'm going to allow late pledges. So people will be able to pledge late once the campaign wraps up. And then any leftover stuff will be put online. People can buy it.
Okay. You know, speaking of online, I got to give you props, man. The video on Kickstarter for this project. Fantastic, not only just visually, but the music was awesome too. If you don't mind me asking, how long did that take for you to put it together? Did you actually put it together? Did you farm it out to somebody else and whatnot? So talk to us about that video, because folks, it's awesome. You need to go check it out. I'm serious.
Thank you. I put the video together. I have my backgrounds in like marketing, video editing, graphic design stuff. So I put the video together, and then there's like sites you can pay like $30 a month or something and get access to like stock music or whatever. And honestly, I think it took me probably like 10 or 20 times longer just to find the perfect song than it did to actually edit the video. But yeah, the editing the video maybe took, I don't know, about a day and a half. It's one of those things where I was stuck and was like, maybe I'll just sleep on it and see how I feel tomorrow. And it wound up being shorter, but I think it was good and did what it needed to do. I'm real happy with how it came out.
Yeah, it's awesome. And again, I urge anyone that's even a little bit interested, even if you're a little bit interested in what Ross got going on, you should go over and check it out, you know, because it's awesome. It really had me grooving in my seat over here. So
I'm glad.
Yeah. So let's talk about a couple of other past projects here real quick before we run short on time. You worked with, as you mentioned, three other creators this year. What's the key attribute you think has to be there for a collaboration to be successful?
I've never had like what I would think would be an unsuccessful or weird, bad experience. Okay. So I don't know. Just a fun story. And I'm very open with it. Like if a writer just wants to let me do my thing and kind of be like hands off, like here, send me the finished pages when you're done. I trust you. That's cool. If somebody wants to like have check-ins and like kind of like see what I'm doing and give feedback along the way, I'm cool with that too. Cause I think I almost prefer that if anything, cause I need like a leash or I'll just sort of wander off the path. And it's a good learning experience just to see what other people are looking for. I don't feel like I really learn a whole lot if I'm just kind of doing whatever and saying here's my pages at the end of it. But yeah, I think just being cool and open to things. Even the people I've worked with that are pretty hands-off, I do like and respect that they're really open to feedback at the writing stage. Like they'll send me the script before we'll send it to the editor or whatever. And be like, are you cool with this? Are there any changes you think? And then I think the thing I'm learning as I'm collaborating with other people is what to look out for. Because I know early on when I was working with people, there was things where like they were fitting way too much, but I didn't think about it until I was actually drawing it. Like it looked fine. It looked like it would be an easy thing. Or they weren't being clear enough as like who was doing what in the staging of the scene. It's like, oh, you have this person doing this in panel one, but now they're way over here across the room in panel three. Like what happens in between one, two, and three? Like, do I make that up? Do you have an idea? So now I'm at a point where like I can ask those questions or prod or like just bring up weird issues. But for the most part, I've had great experiences with everybody I worked with.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Raw for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. They got you covered for your comic book fandom. So you can check them out by stopping by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can check them out online. WGComics.com is the web address. And they're pretty active on the Facebook page. Just search for @WGComics. Do you have a dream collaboration of anybody in the world? If that was the option. If you rubbed the magic lamp and a genie came out and said, Raw, you can collaborate with one person, I'll make it happen. Who would it be?
I have honestly never even thought about it. Because I do everything, I'm so greedy. And I just want to play in somebody else's sandbox with like an IP or something. Like
okay.
Throg, the Thor Frog. Like if Marvel was like, we'll give you like a 3-issue miniseries of Throg. I would make the sickest Throg you've ever read. But as far as working with some, Joan Vasquez would be cool. It would probably be somebody in animation. Like Rebecca Sugar, who did like Steven Universe.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
that would be a dream. Because I find that whole pipeline just fascinating, and it's so collaborative, and there's so many people involved. Something like that, like working with a really cool animation team, collaborating with them on something would be pretty sick.
Okay. You know, I don't know if I asked this or not, even though it, as a side note, by the way, it's almost been a year to the day since the last time that you were on the show. It was really? Episode 454. Yeah, it's November 21st, I believe. So there you go.
Wow.
And I may have asked you this at that particular time, but obviously Saturday morning cartoons is a big inspiration for you. What were some mm-hmm. of your favorites, or what are some of your favorites? You probably still watch them today.
When I was a kid, I loved the Disney stuff, like Chip and Dale. I was obsessed with Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. Like when, like little, like I might have been four or five, but I definitely remember, like, if I would hear the song on the TV, I would like run downstairs and like plop down. And that kind of got me the whole Disney afternoon, like had me just locked in as a kid. And then it was like later stuff, Batman, the animated series. But now I still love like that mid-2000s Cartoon Network era, like Steven Universe, Adventure Time, stuff like Gravity Falls, Amphibia. Like, I just feel like that stuff put what I grew up with in like a blender and added magic potion and something else came out. Like, I wish cartoons were that cool when I was growing up. Like, that kind of stuff's on a whole different level. And very like emotionally mature, which it, like, blows my mind. Or Craig of the Creek, amazing show. Like, I slept on that show for years. And I was online and people just were like, I don't know how people haven't seen Craig of the Creek. And it's one of the greatest cartoon shows, easily like top three for me. It's just such a fascinating, phenomenal, wholesome show.
Well, I forgot to ask about one of your other projects that we talked about when you were on last year. And that was Rebel Roach versus Rocket Punch Susie. I can say it. So you want to tell the folks that maybe they're not going to go back and listen to episode 454, which they should. If not, Ron and I are going to come and knock on your door and we're going to demand an apology. anyways,
yes.
So talk to us a little bit about that project, if you would.
Yeah, that was like my first comic. My uncle made me do it, basically. There's this online comic battle site that I got him into. I was really into it way back in my 20s. That was years ago. And you create a character, you make a character sheet, you do like a 3-page, 4-page intro story, and a panel of judges approves or denies your entry into this online battle site. And my uncle had a character on there named Rebel Roach, which was this 17-year-old teenager kid who broke into some bioengineering facility and falls into this goo that attaches to him, and it's like a bionetic, I don't know, cockroach outfit that like lives inside of him, and he can summon it and like cover himself in this giant roach, Iron Man sort of thing. And he'd done a lot of battles there, and people kind of knew him and his name on that site, and he was like, you just got to do it, man. Like, you told me about it years ago and you haven't done anything. You got to do something. So this was over COVID. He was like, you have all the time now. You don't have any excuses. You're working from home. You're not going anywhere. So we did a little battle on the site. My character, Rocket Punch Susie, she's a delivery girl on a hover bike. Her hover bike sucks, so she orders a jetpack online. And instead of a jetpack, this giant glove comes. So she's mad, and she wants to hunt down whoever shipped her this big glove instead of a jetpack. But it came with instructions. She threw away because she's an idiot. So that's kind of how the story just starts. And then my uncle filled in the blanks of like where this glove came from. And he created like this bad guy that they both team up against. So he wrote like part one of this story. And then I finished part two. And he's like, let's publish it. Like, let's get it printed. But while we were working on it, he actually got COVID and was in a coma. And it was like super scary. Like, I don't know if he was going to make it. And the community that we did the online battles, entervoid.com. And I remember people on their Discord were being super cool. And they were sending me fan art of his character. Like, I hope he makes it, man. I hope your uncle like pulls through. And he pulled through, but he had to like relearn some motor skills and stuff. You know, this was back 2020. and he's still kind of like a little messed up from it. Like he has the, he calls it like COVID brain. Like, well, we'll have conversations about things and forgot we had the conversation. I'm like, you don't remember I told you that? Well, yeah. But I mean, he pulled through and he finished his pages before I did. He had more pages than me and still got his pages done before I did. So dude's a champion. But yeah, that was like my first comic, just a little one shot. And then I planned to do like a 6-issue thing with Susie. And then this thing called Tag and Quest came into my brain and derailed that plan pretty fast.
Can folks still get copies of Rocket Roach and or Rebel Roach and Rocket Punch Susie?
Yeah, I have those. You get those in person from me. They're super exclusive. I don't have those online anywhere right now. Probably won't. I'm like low on them. So maybe that'll just be like a collector's thing. Or I do want to do the 6-issue Susie story. And then I was thinking, like, if I ever collected them, I would put that Rebel Roach in there in like a collected edition.
All right. Well, before we wrap things up, I have one final question for you. I was kind of scrolling through your social media. And so I came across this fact. So I have to ask you, why is Felix the Cat your favorite character design?
Oh, he just looks great. He has the perfect silhouette and it just makes me happy. Like, like just looking at that face makes me super happy. Ever since I was a little kid, I was obsessed with Felix. And then I remember the first time I saw Astro Boy, he kind of almost has that same silhouette.
Yes.
And I just loved it. Like it's a nice mix of, and I feel like I have it in my art to a degree. It's like a mix of bold round shapes with like a few hard pointy edges here and there. I feel like that's me as a person.
All right. Well, let's run it down. Let's talk about the Kickstarter, social media, website, and all that jazz. Raw. Let's let the folks know where they can find you online.
Yeah, you can follow me at raw.comics with an X on Instagram and TikTok. I'm also on Blue Sky. You can search for me there. And then just search for Tag and Quest on Kickstarter. And if it's not up by the time this podcast comes out, you should be able to still do late pledges. And if you miss out on that, you'll be able to find it online. But don't miss out, man. It's going to be really cool.
Yeah, and if I may interject, don't be one of those people that like, are sitting there going, well, he got his money, he it funded that's neither here nor there. That's not the point. The point is it's a great comic, you need to check it out, and you shouldn't just have that negative mindset, because I think that's very negative when people say that.
Oh yeah, and that extra money does help, because you never know, something weird might happen. Like I might get some weird damaged copies or delays, and you get some bonus free goodies with it that you wouldn't get if you just bought the comic by itself. Like, you're going to get some stickers and cool, fun things. And just for the Kickstarter, I did sketch covers. I don't know if I'm going to ever print those again, but there's blank sketch covers that look like a hello, my name is sticker. In the graffiti world, they call those slappy stickers. Put them on mailboxes and stuff, as long as you own those mailboxes and stuff. So yeah, lots of goodies if you back it.
There you go. So folks, yeah, do it. Help the man out, all right? Raw, thanks so much, man, for taking some time out of your very busy schedule to sit down and chat.
Thank you, man. I appreciate this. I appreciate it.
You're quite welcome. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Raw, talking about his new project, Tag and Quest. It's a real interesting comic, and again, I definitely ask you, if you're even just like 5% interested, check it out over at the Kickstarter page, or follow Raw on social media, and I'm sure he will have links to where you can get the book, get status updates, etc., etc. So, but right now, I think it's time for me to let you know where you can get in touch with me. Well, first off, you can shoot me an email. JohnOrlando@pvdcast.com is the email address. You can also drop me a line over on the Facebook, Instagram, and Threads account. That is @pvdcast. And you can still find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @pvdmvp. Maybe you want to let some folks know about where they can hear the PVDcast. Well, let me run down those avenues for you. First of all, PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly, and probably the best place to get every new episode. It's also available through all of your favorite podcasting outlets or apps. All you have to do is go to the search bar, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And while you're using those outlets and apps, please don't forget to rate and review. Rating and reviewing moves me up the algorithm. And of course, if you're rating and reviewing, you might as well be subscribing as well, because you need to subscribe to the PVDcast so that you never miss an episode of this wonderful show. But there's still a third way that you can catch the latest episode, and that is every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. I do a little Facebook Live broadcast of the week's episode. So there's three easy ways to hear the PVDcast: through PVDcast.com, through your favorite podcasting outlet or app, and of course through the Facebook page, as the live broadcast happens every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I thank you very much for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2025.